Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, Oracle pulls a Chinese government move on TikTok, Facebook crosses a Rubicon, or maybe it's a Volga, in this case, and Patrick Norton lets us know if it's time to try buying a GPU again. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, March 11th, 2022, in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Somewhere in St. Louis, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Roger Cheng, the show's producer.
There is a longer version of the show called Good Day Internet that's flipping up its format starting Monday. If you'd like to get DTNS and more, subscribe to it. Patreon.com/DTNS.
Also, big thanks to our top patrons. Today, they include Tim Ashman, Johnny Hernandez, and High Tech Oki.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
The Financial Conduct Authority, or FCA, is warning cryptocurrency ATM operators in the UK to shut down. The FCA says that the crypto firms who've registered with it haven't been granted permission to operate ATM services, and as a result, operating crypto ATMs is illegal. The Telegraph reports that there are around 81 functional crypto ATMs in Britain, at least at this time, based on data from the Coin ATM Radar Tracker, the majority of which are in supermarkets and convenience stores.
Meta announced Code Verify. It's a Chrome browser extension that verifies the content of WhatsApp's web app to make sure it hasn't been tampered with. It's not an unusual situation. It just hadn't been applied to WhatsApp before, so they're using it. It works by automatically comparing a hash of code in the browser with a hash held by Cloudflare. So pretty simple. The extension doesn't read messages. No data is sent to Cloudflare. No data is sent to Meta. It's just making sure that your extension hasn't been tampered with. A Firefox version of the extension is coming soon.
Regulators in the EU and UK have opened an antitrust probe into Google's agreements with Facebook, now Meta, over online advertising. U.S. regulators are also investigating the agreements. Google and Facebook reached agreements on minimum and maximum bids, which aren't unusual in the advertising space. However, the concern is that the relative dominance of the two companies means that the agreements had an outsized and anti-competitive effect on the overall advertising market.
The Reserve Bank of India has blocked Paytm from signing up new customers pending an audit of its IT systems. Paytm is one of the biggest online payment systems in India, so it's kind of a big deal. It will continue to be able to process transactions while the audit is conducted. Just can't sign up new folks.
In a final ruling issued on Thursday, U.S. regulators eliminated the need for automated vehicle manufacturers to build fully autonomous vehicles with manual driving controls designed to meet crash standards. Back in February, just last month, General Motors and its self-driving unit Cruise asked the U.S. National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration for permission to build and also deploy a self-driving vehicle without human controls, without an ability for a human to even get in there later if necessary. Steering wheels, brake pedals, that's the sort of thing a human would need. Of note, the NHTSA's rule says that children shouldn't occupy the traditional driver's seat, given that the driver's seating position hasn't been designed to protect children in a crash. But if a child were to be in that seat, the car would not immediately be required to cease motion.
Yeah, so slowly catching up with the regulations. All right. That's a big step for autonomous cars, though, is the ability to not have to put in stuff it doesn't need to have in there if it gets to a fully autonomous level 5 kind of situation. All right, let's talk a little bit more about this. Is going to be like a retro story going back to TikTok and the Committee on Foreign Investment. Tell us all about it, Sarah.
Let's harken back to 2020. Remember that great year? Wow, so many great things happened. The U.S. government threatened to make ByteDance sell its U.S. TikTok operations, and companies like Microsoft and Oracle angled to get a piece. China made moves to stop that, and a new U.S. president did not continue that push. But the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. did formally order ByteDance to divest itself of U.S. operations. ByteDance successfully obtained a preliminary injunction to stop a sale, and the story kind of faded away from public view. We had other things to think about, but the deal making kept going. It's been going on behind the scenes, and it looks like a settlement may have been achieved. Reuters sources say that Oracle will get a contract to manage U.S. user data for TikTok. So this isn't a sale. It's a agreement. It's a partnership.
It's a contract.
BuzzFeed says 7 current and former TikTok employees said the so-called Project Texas, as it is known internally, at least according to some people, has been ongoing for months. Right now in the U.S., TikTok data is hosted somewhere in the U.S. or in Singapore. None of it is hosted in China. However, that may be changing. Oracle is reportedly cloning some TikTok systems like tracking and analytics tools, the kinds of things that report content vitality and how well the algorithm is doing. All U.S. data would be hosted in the U.S., and processed by Oracle. That is part of the agreement, at least as it stands right now. And tools would be maintained by a new U.S.-based team called U.S. Tech Services. That team would report to middle managers at TikTok in the U.S. who report to ByteDance execs in China. 2 people told BuzzFeed they're looking at ways to legally restrict the Chinese executives from having access to U.S. Tech Services for information. This is similar to what a lot of U.S. companies do in China currently, where they operate cloud services, but the data for the services is maintained by a Chinese company. Microsoft's operations in China go through 21 ViaNet, and Amazon works with NingCS, Western Cloud Data Technology, and also CNET.
Yeah, so first of all, if you thought that was all just some kind of fake thing. When you get the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. to investigate something, they investigate it and they keep investigating it till they're satisfied one way or the other. And they have been continuing to investigate it. The hot, buzzy news went other places, but the committee kept doing the work that it was ordered to do and they weren't ordered to stop. So they came up with this. And I remember... maybe I'm remembering the way I want to remember, but I remember back when this story was news saying, I doubt they're going to make TikTok sell part of itself, but I could see them coming to an arrangement that China has, where China makes the local data be held by a local company. And it looks like that's what's actually going to happen. Oracle is going to be the provider of that data here in this case, but it'll be very similar to what China does. And so China will have less of a leg to stand on in objecting to it.
I got to say, I really thought the Oracle deal was dead. And that just goes to show you how much goes on behind the scenes when we all pay attention to the other shiny thing.
Just because you're not hearing everyone scream about something doesn't mean it has stopped.
We were distracted, for what that's worth.
I mean, we also we can't keep track of every single thing that's happening in the world, right? People sort of pretend like you can know everything. And if you haven't heard about it, it must not be happening. And it's like absolutely impossible for that to be true.
I think you can. I don't know about the rest of us, Tom.
No, I don't. Even I can't. Nobody can. Come on. All right.
If Tom can't, no one can.
I will try, though, even if I can't. And here's an example. Lots of news related to Russia to round up for you today. We'll start with the briefer things and get to the more more complex things. The National Computer Network Emergency Response Technical Team Coordination Center of China says that IP addresses that appear to be coming from the United States, Germany, and the Netherlands, mostly from the U.S., though, have been taking control of computers in China in order to launch attacks on internet targets in Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. If you're like, that sounds familiar, usually the story goes the other direction, that you're usually hearing someone accuse Russia of hijacking computers in China and using Chinese IP addresses to launch an attack on the U.S. So China's saying it's going the other direction now. Also, we've noted before on the show that about 50% of the world's neon gas used for chip lithography is refined in Odessa, Ukraine, and apparently in Mariupol, too, which is being heavily bombarded. Reuters says that Ukraine's neon refinement has halted. They have confirmed it with both of the companies that do it. It may be difficult for those companies to reopen later because machines might get damaged. Even if the machines aren't damaged by bombing, they may not be able to get the raw materials, since 90% of the world's neon gas is a byproduct of steel manufacturing in Russia. The largest chip makers do say that they have secured their own neon supplies for now, but smaller chip makers may run into shortages now that these refineries have been shut down for a while. Reserve supply estimates vary from a few months to a year, but it could take 9 months to 2 years for alternative suppliers to get up and running and fill the gap. So the most optimistic scenario is you fill that gap, you know, right at the time you need it, but that may not happen. Also, in 12 Eastern European countries, Meta's Facebook and Instagram are allowing a spirit of the policy, in their words, exemption to hate speech rules. This relates to the posts in, that object or that if the object of the post is a Russian soldier, someone who is not a prisoner of war. They say if it's prisoner of war, it's a different matter. But if you're talking about Russian soldiers, we assume you mean the Russian military. And if your post is clearly related to the war in Ukraine, then we won't bring the hammer down. The policy will continue to prohibit hate speech against ordinary Russian citizens, however. And this is getting lost in a lot of the rhetoric around this. The exemptions are only allowed in these countries: Armenia, Azerbaijan, Estonia, Georgia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Russia, Slovakia, and Ukraine. In other words, countries bordering Ukraine. A Meta spokesperson told Reuters it will also make an exemption to allow praise of a hate group, an extremist militia in eastern Ukraine. And the Meta spokesperson said, quote, strictly in the context of defending Ukraine or in their role as part of the Ukraine National Guard. In other words, again, they're not encouraging those posts. They're saying when we see that, if it's defending Ukraine or as part of the Ukraine National Guard, we won't remove the post at that point. We'll leave it where it is. In response to all of that, Russian prosecutors asked a court to designate Meta as an extremist organization itself and prohibit its activities in Russia. Russia's communications regulator also announced it will issue a block on Instagram. They're giving folks 48 hours, so March 14th, to get time to get your photos off the platform if you're in Russia. Facebook had already been restricted in Russia, so Instagram joins that. No action is contemplated against WhatsApp because they say that is mostly a messaging app, whereas Facebook is a platform. Instagram is a platform. Facebook has 7.5 million Russian users. Instagram, if you're wondering, like, why didn't they just block Instagram at the beginning? Instagram has 50.8 million Russian users. And WhatsApp, interestingly, has 67 million Russian users.
You know, of all the information in this story, what caught my eye, at least at first, as I was trying to make sense of it, was, wow, okay, Russian Facebook users, 7.5 million, not a lot of, you know, considering the size of the country. Instagram, 50.8 million. WhatsApp, the most, with 67 million. And the fact that WhatsApp is, at least at this point of this recording,
blocked.
Technically shuttered, right? The way that the others are, is sort of telling, because that's what most people are using.
Well, and Patrick, we can't hear you right now. I don't know if you muted yourself, but yeah, you're talking about WhatsApp is end-to-end encrypted too. So there's less of an ability to control the message on WhatsApp. Go ahead, Patrick.
Well, I was going to say for a lot of people outside of the U.S., WhatsApp is this primary. It's what they use instead of texting in a lot of cases. And I can see that creating as many problems for them internally as it would. You know what I mean? I think they lose more by shutting it down than they gain by shutting it down. But the thing with Facebook / Meta is, you know, it just it's so a part of everything else they've been doing. It's just. I don't know.
I think that a lot of people will look at this and have an opinion on whether this or that message should or should not be allowed. I would encourage you when thinking about this to separate yourself from that and say, well, what if it wasn't Russia? What if it wasn't Ukraine? What if it was Yemen? What if it was the Tigray region? What if it was Mali? What if it was one of these other wars? Why isn't Facebook coming in and saying, well, in this case, it's okay to criticize the Saudi military, or it's okay to criticize the Yemen Revolutionary Guard? It does feel a little bit like they are making it up as they go along.
Well, I mean, for them to actually announce a policy beforehand seems kind of unusual for Meta. And two, you know, it's never too late to virtue signal when you've made a name change in an effort to rebrand your organization to make it more palatable to any of a number of investigations and or futures. You know, I don't want to be cruel to Facebook. I mean, yeah. Meta. But it's an interesting move for them. You know, I wonder if they'll remember to change their policies if and when this thing winds itself up.
If you saw there was, for some reason I can't pull it up right now. I'm not sure if it's been taken down, but there was an original Reuters story about the spirit of the policy exemption that you had laid out a couple of minutes ago, Tom, as it relates to hate speech rules and what is allowed in the context of the war, depending on where you live and what platform you're using. And that caused a ton of confusion, even among a lot of journalists that I like and respect who are, you know, trying to figure out, okay, at this point, you know, what is responsible reporting in the sense of this is the tweet that a respected news organization, has laid out that could be construed in a way that isn't necessarily what the story is.
Yeah. And I think you can overreact to this because it is limited to certain countries. It is limited to military action. It's understandable that, you know, tempers are running high. But it is also one-sided, and it also isn't following a clearly established previous principle, as far as I could tell. One more wrinkle that is related to the war in Ukraine that might have some long-term effects on how the internet works. Russian websites can often not renew their existing TLS certificates right now because sanctions prevent payment processing, and that means no HTTPS. And if you don't have HTTPS these days, that means your browser is likely to warn you, even if that site is a totally legitimate site. Russia's Ministry of Digital Development is offering free TLS certificates to things like the Bank of Russia, etc. However, for a certificate authority to be set up and respected, and has to be trusted by the browsers. So far, only the Yandex browser and some Atom products are recognizing these new Russian certificates. You can manually add that certificate authority to Chrome and Firefox if you trust the provider. That is until that provider is actively blocked as part of the certificate revocation list. Now, right now, this certificate is not, so you could add it if you want. So there's two questions. One is if the browser makers will add this to their CA list so that you don't have to, or will they discover that this certificate authority is intercepting traffic, as some people suspect might be the case, in which case they would add it to the revocation list, further causing the splinternet, as they call it. So one to file away in the back of your mind for a future day if you see a story about Russian websites being pushed off the internet or something. If you see certificate authorities come up, it'll be useful to know about this. Hey, if you have a thought about something on the show and you want to send us an email, it might be handy to have our email address. So here it is, feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. Send us an email, please.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Last week, TechRadar's Alex Whitelock published a story on TechRadar.com about falling GPU prices. He said at the time that the trend was looking good, but we still had a ways to go. Patrick's been looking at this himself, digging into the numbers, and has some information for folks wondering when it's going to be safe to try to buy a GPU again. What have you found, Patrick?
Oh, my goodness. So, one, props to Alex Whitelock and TechRadar reader Ted. The reader actually has been tracking GPU prices, and the chart that was posted goes from November 21 and then the peak at, of course, right around Christmas of 21. And then you just watch this. And the max price on like a 3090 was $3,024. Right before in that Christmas shopping holiday madness.
That Christmas frenzy, yeah.
Christmas frenzy. And as of the middle of February in 2022, it was down to 2,362, which is still more than I ever planned to play for an entire gaming machine. So the prices are down, right? And part of this is Tom and I were talking about this the other day. I talked to a friend of mine who's deep in the mining community. I talked to a couple other people. Like, the biggest thing is probably Ethereum switching to proof of stake, which means, you know, when people buy a GPU to Bitcoin mine, they expect to make a certain amount of money off of it. And the ability to essentially make money mining Ethereum off of cards is just basically going to end in the not-too-distant future.
Because proof of work means your computer is putting in the work to crunch numbers. Proof of stake is like, we're just going to use what you've got. So you don't have to run that GPU hot. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the GPUs, I mean, you know, it could be a great time to buy a used GPU in the not-too-distant future. So it feels like the supply chain is actually catching up.
That's good.
And, you know, kind of the TLDR on this is you can buy cards right now, which is weird. You know, so for like the first time in 18 months, I think I can buy almost any GPU I want from AMD or NVIDIA, right? And of course, we also should point out that Intel is going to be coming online later this year with their discrete GPUs, right? There are tons of cards in stock at Newegg being sold and shipped by Newegg. Micro Center has cards in stock. Not I'm waiting at 9 a.m. on Tuesday or Thursday or Friday when the truck shows up and I see what shows up on the truck, but literally I can't buy it online, but I can see that they have, in some cases, dozens of cards and particular models in stock. I haven't seen that in forever. You know, it's a little crazy to see. They are still painfully expensive. which is a big deal. The $249 price for that RTX 3050, definitely a fantasy. I'm seeing $420 to $490 for those. The not-so-beloved AMD 6500 XT, I've seen it as low as like $230 on its $199 MSRP.
That's
so if you're
almost
desperate.
Almost acceptable. Like we're in shouting distance of like, okay, fine, I'll pay a little premium to get it. Yeah.
I'm going to call that a 10% VIG on a card at this point is more than acceptable. I can deal with a 10% VIG. So eBay listings for, I'm going to use scare quotes here, new and unopened box, are lower than Newegg, for example, on 3080s.
Oh, wow.
Or some Amazons. I'm not going to be as patient as Alec Whitelock's reader in tracking the number or the numbers on the auctions. But of course, it also varies on auctions and what time the auction ends and fear of missing out and whatever announcement gets made in the next couple of weeks. And there are a lot of weird things going out there. If you start shopping around, you'll probably see RTX 3050s, RTX 2060s, and GTX 1660s all in the same $430 to $490 price range, which is weird because these are three completely different generations of cards. And the 2060, if you're looking at raw gaming performance, is as much as 20% faster for 1080p gaming. It's got a healthy 15-17% lead in frame rates at 1440p gaming. So, I'm not saying buy one. I'm not saying buy one now, but boy, take a look at the numbers that are available for the cards that are shipping. And it's just a really weird collection of cards. I laugh because somebody's like, you should get a 3050. I'm like, I have a 1080 Ti. I have to get at least a 3080 Ti to have comparable gaming performance. And again, I'm not spending. I paid more for at least one of the cars I've bought in the last 10 years.
Right.
Or for less for at least one of the cards I bought in the last 10 years than that card and would cost me right now. So, and as you mentioned earlier, things are going to get really interesting in the next year as far as chip production, because all of the neon that was coming out of Ukraine has suddenly ended. I'm going to keep my
there's good news for now,
right.
But the magic eight ball says the future is cloudy, is what this sounds like.
Yeah, try again later.
Yeah.
Try again later. The whole neon thing came up, and I may have said some words that my mother would not have approved of loud enough that my wife may have suggested that I tone it down. It's really crazy, right? Because it seems like demand is easing. Let me say it again. The fact that you can actually go out and buy a card without spending hours hunting is great, right?
Honestly, these prices are painful, but they're not as painful as some of those eBay prices, which was the only way you could even get a card for a while. So,
yes.
So if you're like stuck and you have to have it and it's like, I'll just spend the money. Well, you can actually do that. If you're trying to spend a reasonable amount of money and not quite there yet for all the cards.
We're not there yet, but we're closer. And it's, like I said, it's been really interesting. Like, I don't know where all these 2060s and 1660s are coming from, but somebody must've found a bunch of stuff in a warehouse somewhere and is cutting it loose. So I would say wait as long as you can ... up until the point where prices start creeping up. And I don't know how helpful that is for everybody, but it's nice to see. Like if you've been desperate for a GPU and just getting really ticked off because you haven't been able to buy one, well, you should be able to buy one right now.
Yeah,
may not be happy about the price, but
I guess.
I know, I'm going to steal your line here, because now in stock.net is always the place to go to shop around as well. And we'll have that link in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it's good. Like it's really, if you have a micro center near you, they have cards in stock, but you're going to have to go into the store. Some of the prices on Amazon are good. Some of the prices on Amazon look like they haven't heard the news about the eBay prices coming down. And eBay is always a crapshoot. You may get a fantastic deal if somebody screws up and ends an auction at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday.
Well, sure. Amazon's almost as bad as eBay on stuff with resellers these days. So.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to something that I think we can all agree on, that quadcopters are cool.
Yes.
Sure.
But quadcopters also are sometimes loud.
They hurt
One objection is noise, especially when it comes to quadcopters delivering things, because the drone delivery future we were all promised. But how's it really going to play out?
I love the idea of drone delivery, Sarah. But if I'm getting my meal at night, are my neighbors going to be okay with that? It's kind
of,
you know.
Well, sure. Yeah. It's like outside of normal standard working hours, people don't expect to hear leaf blowers and they don't expect to hear quadcopters either.
Exactly.
Leaf blowers descending from the sky.
Basically airborne leaf blowers. That's what a quadcopter is.
My worst nightmare. Well, CNET reports that NASA's innovative advanced concepts may have found and funded a solution. MIT Aerospace Engineering Professor Stephen Barrett and the MIT Electric Airface Initiative have been working on a silent, solid-state drone. The aircraft uses a series of electrodes beneath the wings to create a high-voltage field. This accelerates nitrogen molecules in the air, which then propels the plane. It's small. It might be best for vertical takeoff and landing in urban areas, where you don't have a whole lot of a wiggle room as far as taking off and landing. Perfect for package deliveries. We've been waiting for this for quite some time, but the folks in urban areas really are the ones that have to think about how this is going to work out the most. Of course, NASA is interested in it for Mars and space exploration in general, but the fewer moving parts, the fewer things to go wrong. But we would like silent burritos delivered to us at 9 p.m., everybody. I mean, let's be honest. This is a thing.
NASA wants your Mars. We want silent burritos.
Yeah. Yeah. I want the burrito. I mean, it won't be silent while I'm eating it, but it will be silent when it lands in my backyard. Barrett's team will receive $175,000 in phase one of NIAC funds to develop the technology over a 9-month period. And then they'll work on improving efficiency, also flying time, and do some outdoor tests to make sure that the proof of concept indeed works.
Yeah, because this thing can't fly for very long, hence urban areas, right? You're not going to be going over rural distances. And they've only tested it inside where the air is calm. So they need to get it to fly outside where you got, wind gusting up.
Let's talk an ice storm, everybody, then let's see how this goes.
So lots of things to work out, but silent drones. It could get over one of the objections to drone deliveries, perhaps. Maybe not the only one, but it's some cool technology and cool science anyway.
I mean, listen, noise pollution is something that is already an issue, and depending on where you live, it can be pretty restrictive as far as your happiness goes. So yeah, I think this is really cool.
All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. Jerry asked, I'm just wondering why you're changing the format of GDI DTNS, meaning the times and kind of how we're formatting it. Jerry says, I kind of like GDI as pre and post show for DTNS as it is now.
Yeah, if you only get Daily Tech News Show, you may not realize that a change is coming. And no change is coming to Daily Tech News Show. What's happening is our live stream is going to start 15 minutes earlier, starting on Monday. And then when we do that, we are also going to start the show with DTNS. So we'll start the live stream with the GDI theme song. We'll say hi to everybody, but we're going to go right into Daily Tech News Show to start. And the idea behind that is we've done a survey on this for years, and there's a split in the audience. Some people like the way it is, mostly because that's always been the way it is. But a lot of people are like, yeah, I don't listen to GDI because I want to just get into the Daily Tech News Show. And I don't always have time for everything else. If we start with Daily Tech News Show on Good Day Internet, that means you can choose when you want more. But the days when you don't have time, once you get to the end of the 30-minute show, you can bounce out and maybe save the rest for later. But you've got the most essential stuff at the top. It's classic journalism. Tell them the most important stuff first. So that's why we're switching it.
I mean, not to say GDI fodder is not important, but yes, we also have had folks say, sometimes on GDI before the show, you say you're going to talk about something after the show, but then you don't because, there's been a whole show in between.
Yeah.
So I think this is kind of helping our brains stay the most focused possible, we think.
And if you've ever been like, you know what, I don't need to get Good Day Internet from Patreon because I just want DTNS. Well, now you can just go get it from Patreon and you'll get it right off the top every time. So if that's been an objection to you supporting us on Patreon, well, that objection has been removed.
Well, as always, your feedback is appreciated. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where you can send us thoughts on format changes or anything that we talk about on the show, and, you know, strength and numbers. Thank you in advance. Speaking of Patreon, I also wanted to extend a special thanks to Justin Zellers. Justin is one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. So, Justin, today is your day.
Woo, Justin. Thank you, Justin.
Justin. Justin. Justin.
We still need 11 patrons to bring us back up to the level of February. Our March level is 11 below February. Just so you know.
Yeah, make March Madness work for you. Also, thanks to Patrick Norton for being with us today and bringing the knowledge on GPUs and everything else. Patrick, let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
As always, just follow me on Twitter at Patrick Norton, or hang out with Robert Heron and I, not Roger Chang and I. No one wants to hear Roger Chang and I whine. But Robert Heron and I.
I think plenty of people would.
That would be a podcast. The Dadcast. I'm digressing, and I'm supposed to do this in like 10 seconds. AVXL.com.
I'm sorry, or just
search your AVXL.
Yeah. Never mind, Patrick.
I've cut it off right at the tease, too. AVXL.com. AVXL.com. Sorry, Pat.
We're going to keep reminding y'all, because we know we're going to have a few questions about it, so we'll just keep hammering in. We are changing our format starting Monday, March 14th. And this has to do with daylight savings time starting in the U.S. on Sunday, March 13th. We will be live starting Monday, March 14th, 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. If you have any questions, let us know. Hopefully you get it. Now, tomorrow, science correspondent Nikki Ackermans has the monthly science highlights. That'll be a fun thing. And we'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people: host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt, host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane, executive producer and booker Roger Chang, producer, writer, and host Rich Stroffolino, video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz, associate producer Anthony Lemos, Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos, news host, writer, and producer Jen Cutter, science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans, social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding, our mods: Beatmaster, WScottus1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Video feed by Sean Way. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luders, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Trace Gaynor. Patreon support from Dylan Harari. Contributors to this week's show included Nika Monfort, Terrence Gaines, Justin Robert Young, and Patrick Norton. And our guest this week was Jennifer Briney. And thanks to all our patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.